Welcome back to Sound Effect on KPLU. Gabriel Spitzer here. Our theme this week is You Are What You Eat. So, my kid recently asked me what my favorite food was, and this is not something I've thought about lately because I'm a grown-up, but as I considered it, I just couldn't think of anything better than a thick slab of toast smothered in butter. I have often been called out, correctly, as a carbitarian, but the guy we're about to meet might actually love wheat more than me. Dr. Stephen Jones is the director of Washington State University's Bread Lab up in Mount Vernon. They do research and breeding and generally look to make wheat less of a commodity and more of a real food. So I visited him in his wheat field. It's a shaggy 20-acre plot with tens of thousands of different types of wheat and barley. And we talked, in the rain, about his connection to this unassuming crop.
So we're walking by a club wheat. That's a type of wheat that used specifically for pastry. We're walking towards bread wheats here, and you just see the difference. You see the beauty in a field like this, not just capturing the diversity with our eyes, but just the sheer differences. Then just with the notion that we've been growing wheat for 10,000 years on this planet in an organized way, and basically on a worldwide basis, we've only done that 10,000 times. And that's not that many. I've had more breakfasts than 10,000.
But wait, what does that say to you, that we've been doing it for a long time, but really it's only been turned over that many times?
It draws that connection where it's not an inconceivable number, right? It's a number that we can appreciate, and it's a history and tradition that we can appreciate, and it's the sheer beauty of a crop, even on a day like this in the rain. It may even be more beautiful. You can almost hear the voices in it.
The voices. What do you mean by that?
Just the voices of the tradition, the voices of the people that came before us into this crop. I don't get that when I walk in a lettuce field. I do in wheat.
Well, before we get out of the rain, could we, I don't know, find a type that you just find especially aesthetically pleasing that you like to look at or hold?
Sure.
and really closely examine it?
Yeah. Right now we're standing in front of Red Russian. This wheat variety is almost 6 feet tall here. It demonstrates a few things. First is just the beauty of a line like this. Once it matures, it'll turn a reddish sort of color, even a sort of mahogany. It makes an incredible pasta.
And do you find something, I don't know, pleasing about the shape of this plant, the way it feels between your fingers, the
Yes.
sensory part of it?
For sure. And this one's a touch tall to do that, but normally when we would walk through a field, you can just put your hands out to the side and just let them run through sort of it's a similar sensation to water. If you're in a kayak, just letting your fingers drag through the water, you get a similar feel.
So when did your love affair with wheat begin?
Well, my love affair with bread started when I was about 6 years old. My Polish grandmother taught me to make wheat bread and rye bread, and then eventually bagels. And then I went to Chico as an undergrad, and then I had the opportunity to grow wheat as a crop there. And it was an amazing experience for me, and I've grown wheat every year since then.
So we don't think of the Northwest as being wheat country, right? Wheat we associate with the Midwest. How is it that we are growing wheat here?
Right. The reason that wheat is grown in Kansas and the Dakotas and places like that is because you can't grow anything else there. It's not because the best place to grow wheat, and that's an important point. The best places to grow wheat are California, Oregon, Washington, places that have beautiful soil, ample rainfall, cool nights, things like that.
Was it commonly accepted that this was a natural place to grow wheat when you got into this industry?
The first thing I heard when I got here is you can't grow bread wheat here in Skagit Valley. So that's the first thing we did was plant bread wheat.
And that was just a conventional wisdom?
It's folkloric, and there's a lot of folklore in agriculture. So we planted bread wheat. George De Pasquale baked it. He's the head baker and one of the founders of Essential Baking. He said, this has chocolatey overtones with a hint of spice, and it's the best bread that I've tasted in 33 years. That absolutely floored us. A hint of spice, really? So chocolatey overtones? I mean, I'd been working in wheat for 30 years. I'd never heard that. So we were completely blown away, and we started working with George and other bakers to capture that nuance of flavor.
Stephen Jones was one of the first guys to show that the flavor of the wheat was influenced by where it's grown, like fine wine. But still, it's been kind of a tough decade for wheat, PR-wise. Everybody's trying to avoid gluten and carbs. And as we head back to his bread lab, which is more like half laboratory, half bakery, I asked him what it's like to be a devotee of this much maligned grain.
If people don't want to eat wheat, have at it. I do. And what these movements have done in terms of anti-wheat is they have focused in on, you know, this lowly crop. And for us, it's helped us because we can feel better in terms of producing a product that we know is nutritionally dense and we know is good.
I am a person who has occasionally been known as the king of carbs in certain circles. Like I am a bread and wheat fanatic. And I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that this stuff is bad for me. And so I do kind of feel guilty whenever I have some kind of a wheat or grain product lately. So what have you got for me
What I've got for you is you should bake your own bread or go to good craft bakers. The bread that we make has four ingredients, basically, and wheat flour, salt, water, and some kind of starter or leavening agent. That's it. That's what you need for bread. If you're eating grocery store bread that has 25 ingredients, I'd ask why those extra 20 are in there. But I wouldn't feel guilty of eating bread. I would migrate towards breads that have a long ferment. So they're sourdough, they're naturally fermented. That makes it easier to digest. That breaks up the gluten. It makes the micronutrients more available and also brings out flavor. So I'd go for a naturally leavened bread, but I would embrace it. I wouldn't feel guilty. I don't. I have it every morning for breakfast.
So do you? What do you have?
I have a one piece of toast from bread that I made with peanut butter and a lot of salt added on top of that with a little bit of apricot jam. That's what I have every day. If you like bread, bake, and remember that bread is alive. So there's a process occurring there. The yeast and the bacteria are alive in there. That dough is coming to life. And there's a connection there that you can make too. We talked to a lot of people that talk about the love that's going into a loaf of bread.
So wait, the love in the dough thing, mm-hmm. Do you buy it?
I do, yeah. I don't use that word necessarily. I feel I have a good connection with it. For me, it's almost a melancholy or a sadness that I pull in from the tradition of the whole thing. It just goes back to how I feel in the field, right? But I do think of my Polish side. So before my grandmother and grandfather came to this country, they were not farmers, but they worked on farms. And I feel that in the bread as I make it. I remember as a child the smells and the sights and working with the dough and making bread. So it's an overwhelming beauty is probably a better way to say than a true sadness.
Stephen Jones of the Bread Lab here at the Washington State University Outpost in Mount Vernon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was great.